The following audio file was recorded on April 8th in Nashville, Tennessee by Earnhardt Productions Incorporated at a voting rights and election reform conference titled Gathering to Save Our Democracy. It has been uploaded to this site courtesy of the January 30th Coalition, an Ohio-based voting rights group which endorsed the conference. You are welcome to copy and distribute or broadcast this recording. Please also consider making a donation to Radio for All so that recordings like this one can continue to be made available.
Well, for those of you who picked up our paper, you saw that we do have an article this morning on the conference, and I was very pleased to see that, and exceptionally pleased that Ms. Luxor, the reporter, stayed with us, I think, 8 or 9 hours yesterday, and will be back this morning. If you didn't read the article, of course, it focused pretty well on the conference, but I thought the as always, in an attempt to be fair and balanced, Ms. Luxor called our county administrator of elections, and this is the final quote of the article. There are 604 electronic voting machines in Davidson County, Barrett said. We have not had any problems with our machines. We love our machines. And my only response to Mr. Barrett, and of course, not being in the room, he won't hear this, but respectfully, Mr. Barrett, how do you know whether you've had problems with the machines or not? Because they don't give us a paper ballot. So we might all be surprised, including you, at just how much the love for those machines is misplaced. We're going to start this morning, as a segue from that statement, with a few words from Andy Stevenson. Is Andy in the room? There we go. Again, to put the rest, put today in context, we heard quite a bit yesterday about, you know, the central flaw with electronic voting, and we're very happy that Andy was able to join us and thought we'd get started this morning with a few words from him. Andy.
Well, so the whole conference is about DRAs, so I'm going to kind of shift gears here a little bit and ask two questions. What is it that we want, and what do we need? If we're going to call ourselves a democracy, what is it? What is the minimum that we, the people, require to participate? I'm up here today to talk about paper ballots. Why? To me, the answer is just one word, faith. In order to vote, I must have faith. Faith in the system, faith in the process, and it's the faith that makes me believe that it matters that I participate at all. And anywhere along the way, if society, our government, elected officials, or individuals damage that faith, or cause me to question that faith, it doesn't just hurt me, it hurts democracy. Democracy can't be bought or sold with guns or bombs. Democracy is born as an idea and grows in the hearts and minds of those who believe in it, those who have faith in the system. Why is the American dollar stronger than the peso? At least the last time I checked, faith. Take away my ballot, my real-life paper ballot, and you've undermined my faith at the most basic level, the tactile level, at the level which I can touch and feel and really feel my vote. I'm not a Luddite, and I'm not against machines counting paper, but I wouldn't trust a bank without deposit slips or an ATM without receipts. I don't have faith in corporations, weathermen, or politicians, and I shouldn't have to trust any of them to count my vote. Referring to arms control treaties with the Soviet Union, Ronald Reagan once said, trust but verify. But I say, provide me with a way to verify, and then I can start to trust. And don't tell me that you trust the system. There's got to be a way for me to trust the system. I need to be able to understand the process and verify the results in order to gain faith in the process. This is a new bill of goods those who would take my paper ballot away are trying to sell. They want me to believe in mathematics, a cryptography solution. Vote Here is one such company pushing this solution. Some fancy math and a receipt that I can punch into the internet that shows that I voted, but no one seems to be able to explain to me how it works. Fancy mathematics and fancy words lose my attention. While I might not be able to calculate the weight of the sun, I should be able to understand how we count votes. If we're going to have a democratic society, it must allow me and you and any average citizen that's bad at math to still be able to count the vote. You have to be able to convince me that the system is valid. The average member of society isn't going to understand a fancy system of cryptography, but just as most of us realized long ago that fancy math hasn't helped us to predict the weather, a 60% chance of a valid election doesn't sound very good to me. I just don't have faith in fancy math. I especially don't have faith in fancy proprietary math. Another word for proprietary is secret. So when someone tells me they have some fancy mathematics, a cryptography solution that makes my paper ballot unnecessary, once again, I'm not really that interested because I don't have that much faith in mathematics that I don't understand. And if you have to resort to explaining the system with metaphor and simile, or if you need several experts to explain it to me, you've lost me and I have no faith in the system that you build. These machines, these black box voting machines, already in place in several states and counties around the country, require me to trust without verification. They require me to trust the election officials, the government, trust the companies, trust the programmers, trust the mathematicians. But frankly, none of these people ever had my trust to begin with. The media, the voting officials, the voting machine companies, and even the Supreme Court is arguing that speed is of the essence, and that's the Supreme Court in Washington. And obviously, these machines are far speedier without paper ballots clogging up the process, but I don't care so much about speed. I'm more interested in accuracy. The battle isn't for speed, and my faith isn't challenged by slow and steady bookkeeping with proper auditing. It's challenged by secrets and lies, and once you've lost it, faith is a hard thing to regain. These companies and our election officials have lied to us, are lying to us, and will continue to lie to us. They've committed fraud, and it is a conspiracy. It's a conspiracy to get rid of paper ballots, and I, for one, am losing my faith in the system. Now, don't be fooled. It's not just about paper. The devil's in the details, and the details are in the words used. It's a verbal shell game where paper trail and paper receipt are used to confuse you. The words paper and ballot should not be separated. They go together like peanut butter and jelly. And to separate them undermines their strength. Paper is tangible, traceable, hard to destroy. Electrons, on the other hand, are small. We can't see them. Most of us would have a hard time really explaining what they are. When I lose a $20 bill, I notice it's gone. When I lose an electron, I don't really notice, unless my computer crashes. Or I can't find a term paper or my music skips. Scratch a piece of paper, I can still read what's written on it. Scratch a new CD and it's worthless. Paper trail, paper receipt. What do these terms mean? To me, it means someone's trying to pull one over on me. Because when it comes to voting, I know what a ballot is. It's been defined by law over hundreds of years. When I go to the grocery store, I get a receipt. When I sell a house, I sign a contract. And when I vote, I get a ballot. Similes mean similar. They don't mean the same. And people who know the difference use the wrong words on purpose. They want some wiggle room. They want to change the system. They want to redefine the terms to get rid of paper. Turn the ballot into electrons and give you a receipt. Or a paper trail. Trick you into having faith in the system. So let's be clear here and not mince words. A receipt is something that I get when I buy a banana. A ballot is something I get when I vote. My eyes are still on the ball, though, and I'm not letting go of my paper ballot. And to adopt the words of the NRA, you'll have to pry my ballot from my cold, dead hands. Words have meaning, and meaning builds faith. Faith is built on a foundation of trust. Take away my trust and you've undermined the foundation. Bastardize the meanings built on that foundation and you weaken the structure that holds up even weaker words. And just as assuredly as a house that starts to crumble as the foundation is eroded and the walls start to fall, democracy is being undermined as the meaning is corrupted and the foundation is slowly torn away from underneath. Take away my paper ballot and you strip away the keystone on which I build my faith in the system. So all this talk about faith and really so far very little about the actuality of how paper ballot works to increase my trust in the system, you may ask me how a system of paper in which ballot boxes turn up in Lake Michigan or are lost in the back rooms of King County inspires faith. The key is that they do turn up later. One might be able to steal a few hundred votes, a ballot box might disappear here and there, but their very physicality makes those ballots hard to destroy. But click a button and send a few electrons off into the ether, who knows if it ever gets where it's going. There's no physicality, and if it's lost, where will we find it? The term paper I lost in college is still lost. It never turned up in the back of the lecture hall or under the bed in my dorm room. Electronic votes that are lost will never be found in the back room, and no ballots will ever turn up in the river or in the trunk of someone's car. Just because the machine recounts tells us the same number when we ask doesn't mean it's accurate. Data can be precise and simultaneously inaccurate. Paper ballots are not a panacea, and they won't fix the system, but they are the foundation on which the system is built. There are many layers above the foundation on which the house of democracy is built. There are many checks and balances which must be in place to assure that our votes are counted accurately. Random audits, checking the paper against the machine counts, correlating the number of votes with registered voters are all good and necessary ways to double check the accuracy of the process. And any system is going to have a certain calculable margin of error. And if any of us are going to be honest about what just happened in Washington State, the margin of victory fell well inside that margin of error. Regardless of the recount, neither side can substantially claim a victory. So the only victory left was a legal victory. There are obviously more than one way to lose faith in the system of belief. But without a solid foundation, there's nothing for me to build my faith upon. Voting in this country used to be a public process. We voted in public. The vote was counted in the public by the public. We trusted the system because we, the people, were the system. And every battle we the people fought was to increase that trust, either to increase the number and types of people that voted, or to increase the validity of the system by reducing the influence of others on our personal choices. But now we vote in secret using a secret ballot on machines with secret code. I think something's been lost, don't you? One more thing. I told Bernie I was a man of few words, but that was a long speech for me, you guys, it really was. Teresa Hommel has asked me that during the lunch break to announce that she's doing a tutorial against the electronic voting. It's in the ladies' lounge. There's a packet of materials and other resources, and so if y'all are interested, see Teresa, and let's knock them dead today, guys.
Okay, if we could start assembling the first panel up on the stage. I know that this morning we have a few people who were not with us yesterday, and as the panel's assembling, we were here, I think, till past 11 o'clock last night, and with Bob Fetrakis being our final speaker, I think we could have stayed till 3 or 4. Everyone seemed to be pretty energized after he spoke. But for those of you who weren't with us yesterday, the point Andy just made about suddenly we're making speed in the election process our primary value. What you got to hear, what those of us who were here yesterday got to hear, was that often speed precedes a train wreck, and we heard, or excessive speed, and we heard quite a few examples of train wrecks in 8 to 10 states, who again were just the tip of the iceberg. But I'm very appreciative of our speakers yesterday for highlighting the problem. And the other thing, the other historical example of how, you know, there are values that should override speed was back in the 30s in Germany, when people who were uneasy with their leader kept saying to each other, but at least he makes the trains run on time. I'd be a lot less concerned about speed from this point forward in our election process. And speaking of that, what's so speedy about an election that was still being contested 2 months after the election because of the process by which we counted the votes? So, and still being contested, thank you, you're right. And hopefully as a result of this conference, we'll be contested more loudly as all of us go home. So yesterday was intended, and I've got a few more panelists here somewhere. Yesterday, the intention of the conference schedule was to focus pretty heavily on the problem, and today the focus is more oriented towards the solution, our solutions. It was encouraging that the solutions kept percolating yesterday, too, and we're not going to get very far from evidence of the problem today. I think they do go hand in hand, but as I said yesterday, this is our 25th gathering locally, and we've been fortunate here in Tennessee to actually speak to a sizable number of audiences who aren't activists, who don't come already aware of these issues. And my experience in Stewart County and Williamson County and other communities here in Tennessee is that when we have a chance to present this information to the audiences, the naive audiences, you can see visibly a great deal of discomfort once we get started, and then concern, and then anger, and then a need to act. And again, that's what we're about here today. I think most of us in the room today came already fairly angry and ready not only to keep acting, but hopefully act more in concert with each other. So this morning, we're going to look at the data one more time from a slightly different perspective. Yesterday, the focus was pretty much state-level evidence of malfeasance. Today, we wanted to focus a bit more on how a number of different methodologies have been applied to analyzing the election that have all surfaced similar conclusions. So our panel today, the only member of the panel who's not with us at this moment is Dr. Phillips. He's being interviewed on Radio Free Nashville this morning, so he'll be with us a little later. It's our brand new low power for the people station, but we are pleased that Dr. Phillips is there. I think Bernie Windham is our only three-star letterman here. We've got him on the program 3 times, and we'll start with another review of, you know, the information collected from the citizenry, and then depending on Richard's schedule with Radio Free Nashville, he'll either go next or we'll put him on the end. So, Bernie, I think I can...
For the ones who were here yesterday, you know that one of the main things that I did was to summarize the election protection hotline incidents that came in on election day all over the country. The election protection system was operating more fully in some places than others. They were mostly in the big counties of the big states and the swing states, but they did have reports from most states across the country if someone called in from there, and some people did were aware of the system and did call in some from even states where they were not very active. So a lot of states were not as active as others, and small counties not as active as some of the big counties. But in any case, they have a big database of something between 40 and 50,000 irregularity reports, incident reports that came in about the election. And it's out there on the web at www.voteprotect.org, O-R-G. And what I did was I was aware of that system, and I didn't see a good summary of that stuff, so I went in and summarized it by state and county. And that's what my presentation is basically here. I have for each state, and I've already done Florida, so I'm not. I'm going to just briefly show it on the. Okay, that's fine. Thank you. By the way, the website was shown there, and I have handouts back on the table where you come in back here. I have handouts that give my website that has a URL for each state. And it also has some other details, like I did some things on electronic machines. I have a paper on electronic machines that was called fraudpat.html on my website. Anyway, so like I said, yesterday I did a thing on Florida, and so I'm going to go through that pretty fast. We had a lot of touchscreen switching. Florida had more reported cases of touchscreen switching than any other state. In fact, we had more incidents of all kinds than any other state, followed closely by Pennsylvania and Ohio. And there was, as I mentioned, and this happened throughout the country. There was manipulation by officials, poll workers, activists to restrict minority vote all over the country. And I summarized in the major counties of many, many states these kinds of problems that occurred, where some states like Florida and Ohio and some others changed their rules to where provisional votes, if they aren't in the official precinct, don't count. And then there was all kinds of manipulations by both activists, illegal dirty tricks, and telling people, sending out letters and calls, telling them they had the wrong polling place. And they also had trouble getting the correct polling place from the their local officials and poll workers additionally. And there were all kinds of things, like I said. There were also, in many states, large-scale purges of the voter rolls. There were also many, in Florida alone, there were over 100,000 people who signed registration forms who found that when they got to the poll, they weren't on the roll. For a lot of different reasons. A lot of it was fraud. It was also a matter of forms not getting processed for whatever reason through the system. There were more selective challenges for ID and things like this in minority precincts. There was, in some cases, there was actually cases where the poll workers actually told the voters the wrong precinct, and they ended up voting provisionally on the advice of poll workers who actually gave them misinformation. So actually in the reports, there are a lot of cases of where poll workers were giving out misinformation about a lot of different things like that. The system's gotten pretty partisan, I think. And also, in very many states, we had registration and absentee ballot problems. Some of that was outright fraud. There were organizations out there that were actually registering people and going out and registering people that wanted to register, and then they weren't turning in the forms. For example, they would turn in Republican forms and not turn in Democratic forms. And that was publicized in the news some. But I don't know of anything that's ever come of it because it was done in several states. We had some of that in Florida. It was done in, I guess, Oregon and Washington and Nevada. But in any case, that was something that occurred. And there were a lot of people who signed forms that didn't end up on the rolls. There were also a huge number of people who requested absentee ballots and who could not get absentee ballots for whatever reason, although they persisted and called the elections offices many times. They still were unable to get absentee ballots. These are people that were disabled and have trouble standing in long lines and that kind of thing, and also people that were going to be out of town on the election day. And so there were huge numbers. Just in a couple of counties in Florida, there were numbers like 50,000 that were reported to have gotten lost in the mail. And then there was a big controversy about whether, well, was it the mail system that lost them, or was it the supervisor of elections office that didn't really get them to the mail? But in any case, there was a big controversy over, in Broward County, 50,000 absentee ballots that the county said they sent out, but nobody got. And there was a similar kind of thing in Dade County and a similar kind of thing in Palm Beach County. And there were similar kinds of things in other states, too, where an awful lot of people were told they had one sent out, but nobody was getting them. So there was a big problem with this kind of thing, not just in Florida, but also all over the country. And I've gone through the Ohio thing, too. They had the same kind of problems that Florida did. They had touchscreen switching, and they had some additional problems with other various kinds of fraud, which has been talked about a good bit, so I'll go on through that. New Mexico has been talked about also. I have a summary of New Mexico. They had widespread systematic dirty tricks, especially in the minority precincts, just like Florida and Ohio and most other big states or swing states. They had phantom votes that were documented. They had touchscreens that were switching. New Mexico is a state that actually had some touchscreens that was going in both directions, as reported by somebody, and I was aware of that too. There was one county in New Mexico where some of the machines were switching from Bush to Kerry, so it wasn't totally one way, and that there was a county that had it going the other way. Pennsylvania had a huge number of problems. They had widespread dirty tricks like other states. They had touch screens that were switching. They had problems with straight party balloting. That's one of the states that someone here has a paper about, straight party balloting. Pennsylvania is another state that had that problem. North Carolina, South Carolina, Indiana, Texas, Missouri, and so forth. a whole lot of states. Kerry lost a huge number of votes because the straight party balloting was not counting for Kerry. So in a large number of states, people who thought they were voting straight party, and that included the president, wasn't the case. As a matter of fact, in some cases, the vote actually, if you voted straight party Democratic, your presidential vote went to Bush. And that happened in a good bit. Like Texas, for example, was like that. Someone mentioned Mercer County. Mercer County, Pennsylvania, was probably the worst county in the country. They actually had the Unelect DREs that were malfunctioning, and when the people got to the polls, they wouldn't work, and they didn't have backup ballots, and they just were not allowed to vote. North Carolina had straight party ticket problems. They had some switching. They had systematic dirty tricks and so forth. And I've got stuff by county and so forth for North Carolina. I've got to go pretty quick because I don't have much time. And there's a lot of states. Alabama had major problems with student voting. They didn't allow students to vote in some of the minority universities. They also had other kinds of suppression. Arizona had a real lot of dirty tricks, and they had a lot of suppression of minorities in that county and other kinds of problems that someone else has already talked about. California had vote switching in several counties, touchscreen switching, and some other kinds of problems. In San Diego, the Democratic candidate got the most votes but was not named the winner. And on a technicality, even though a clear majority of voters voted for the Democrat, on a technicality, they said that the winner was Republican. That was a matter of, she was a write-in candidate, and the majority actually wrote in her name. But some people didn't put the bubble. They only wrote her name in. But obviously, if you write the name in, you met the person. But if they only wrote the name in and didn't check the bubble, they didn't count the vote. So she clearly won the election, but on the technicality of, well, they didn't hit the bubble, didn't count. Colorado had a huge amount of problems also. Denver had polling place problems, long lines, confusion in the polling places like other states I've talked about. I'm not sure if they, I'm not aware that they had touchscreen switching. I'm not even sure they have touchscreens. The big counties did not have touchscreens, so. But they had a lot of problems of various kinds in the various counties in Colorado. And I'll mention, I have a handout on the back out here that has a URL for each state. So if you're interested in any state, I have on the webpage, I have a URL out here on the table where you come in that gives the URL for each state. Georgia had a lot of switching, touchscreen switching, in at least four or five counties. They had a lot of dirty tricks and suppression, polling place problems, and all that kind of thing, and as reported by the election protection incident reports. Indiana had straight ticket voting for Kerry went to a minor party candidate. And that was true of not only for Kerry, but other races too. So they had major straight party races that caused a lot of confusion in that state. Iowa and Kentucky didn't have very much election protection system operating there, but they did have some systematic problems. Kentucky had some touchscreen switching. Louisiana and Mississippi also didn't have that much election protection system operating, except in New Orleans. And in New Orleans, they had major problems. The touchscreen machines were unreliable and didn't work, and a lot of people didn't get to vote because the machines wouldn't work and they didn't have enough backups, and it was just a major mess in New Orleans, and especially in the minority precincts, that a lot of people there didn't get to vote. Mississippi had some student problems. Okay, looks like I'm out of time. I have, like I said, on my website for each of the states, I have a summary of what the voters said as far as what the problems were in that state. And I'm sorry? It was on the, okay, it was. It's out there. On the table out there, there's a handout that has has the URL for each one of the states.
While Kathy is setting up, someone left a...
Hello, my name is Kathy Dopp, and I'm founder of an organization called Utah Count Votes. And in Utah, we were able to stop the purchase of DRE, direct recording electronic voting machines, that were due to be purchased in December. And I can tell you about that tomorrow morning if you come to the 11 o'clock discussion that I'll be giving. And we were able to stop them even after they wrote specific requirements for DRE voting machines into both the state election reform plan and the RFP, and they had received bids for DRE-only equipment. So you might be interested in that. And I'm also founder of U.S. Count Votes, which is a nonprofit 501(c). We've applied for 501(c) status. And we're planning on auditing election results. So we have a plan that's very doable that only requires our own efforts and what is within our own control for restoring democratic elections in America by 2006 November election. In other words, if we get our National Election Data Archive project done, we will be able to provide the statistical evidence, coordinating, you know, all the types of work that a lot of people here have been doing to analyze the election results, and prevent candidates from conceding without first knowing exactly where they need recounts, investigations, or also perhaps even re-elections if necessary, and then provide them with the statistical evidence they need for court in case they need legal actions. And the sooner we can get this project implemented, the sooner we can begin to provide statistical evidence that even lawyers that are bringing legal actions now need in order to win the legal actions. Because Americans need to know that this is not just a problem in Ohio or just a problem in Florida. We need to create a nationwide database to coordinate this all. Okay. I'm sharing this slide presentation with Josh Middledorf behind me, so I'm going to skip some slides that he's going to handle. As most of you probably know, according to the national exit poll sample, Kerry won by 3%, but yet the official vote count showed Bush winning by 2.5%. The odds of this happening were at first calculated in the millions, over one in a million. And then as time went on, Edison Matowski sort of revised its sample sizes and revised its sort of fudge factor. What was the fudge factor called?
Cluster effect.
Yeah, cluster effect. And the probability got lower and lower, but the best it ever got was 1 in 1,200. That's not very good odds. This discrepancy was definitely not caused by chance alone. In fact, exit polls outside the US serve as a test of election integrity. And it was John Taft, the Assistant Secretary for European and Eurasian Affairs, who explained that the Bush administration funded the exit polls in Ukraine because they were one of the ways that would help prevent large-scale election fraud. And as we know, those exit polls were used to make sure that the Ukraine had a second election. Okay, this slide Jonathan's gonna cover. This one Josh is gonna cover. This one you probably can't see, but it's just to show that U.S. Count Votes last week, March 30th, released a study of the exit poll discrepancy that was 27 pages long. Apparently, I've been told by Bernie that it was on the front page of the Moscow Times. And I think Bernie said it was in the Cuban newspapers, too. So we are making mainstream press. Josh is going to cover this slide, and that slide. This is another table you probably can't see, but Edison Matowski, in their study of their exit poll report, listed a whole bunch of different reasons why, you know, exit poll disparities were caused by different factors. But if you look in the first column there where it says the lowest WPE is within precinct error, you know, the exit poll discrepancy within precincts. Even the lowest errors caused by these factors in the 2004 election was quite high for almost all of the factors. And where it wasn't high at the lowest end, it was because only 3% of precincts were measured in that part. So the majority of the data was measured in other, you know, in the high end of exit poll discrepancy. So no matter what factor they considered, the exit poll discrepancies were high. Another interesting thing is that the same respondents that took the same exact exit polls were more able to accurately predict the Senate races. So the accuracy of the exit poll should have been just as poor in the Senate races as it was in the presidential races if, as they claim, Bush supporters were refusing to fill out the survey, yet that wasn't true. So there's no logic to account for non-responders or missed voters when discussing the difference of accuracy in relation to the presidential versus the Senate races. I'm going to skip these slides. As you know, DRE voting machines are not recountable by local election officials even when they have a voter verifiable paper ballot, because this paper roll under glass system is little thermal paper, rolls up, the ink fades. How are you going to recount it? Are you going to roll it out along the floor and crawl along it? Are you going to cut it into little strips and little curled up strips of paper, and how long is that going to last? It also records ballots. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm too loud. Is that better? Okay, that's probably why the mic was screaming at me. Okay, sorry. It preserves the order of, the ballot order preserves the order of voters that enter the polling booth, so it doesn't protect voter anonymity from poll workers that might have to adjust the ballot. So if someone were to deliberately design a system that was not recountable, this would be it. So for instance, Nevada brought all brand new voting machines, and in the 2004 election, Nevada was one of the states with a big discrepancy between the exit polls and the election results, and yet the Green Party had to give up on recounting the votes there because they found out you had to hire the voting machine vendor to recount the votes for you. It's like having the fox recount the chickens in the chicken coop for you. You know, would you put your money into a bank that never audited its accounts unless you asked for an audit and then you had to pay them to audit your accounts? Okay, this is a list of some of the PhD candidates that, or not candidates, PhDs, that are working with U.S. Count Votes and the National Election Data Archive Project. And you can see they're very reputable PhDs. Campbell Reed is a professor emeritus. Frank Stanger is just has an incredible reputation. Brian Joyner has a reputation a mile long. These are, incredible people that are, they would not sign something that risks their academic reputation. So when they signed the exit poll discrepancy study, it's very clear scientific data, and we would like to be able to analyze all the election results in America. Okay, we have a doable plan, a way to restore democratic elections before 2006, because every state Freedom of Information Act allows us access to the data. So we have a legal right to get the data. We just, in some cases, are going to have to bring legal actions between now and 2006 in order to make sure that we can get the data in a timely fashion in electronic format. Because some states, like Georgia, are requiring that they only give us the data on paper, and they charge by the paper, and so it can cost like $1,500 to get the data from one county, but it would take them 30 seconds to send us the file electronically. So we have a right to the electronic data. We just have to bring the lawsuits to get it so that we can do all the analysis we need to prevent this 2006 election from putting the wrong people into office. So why everything that we need to do to restore the election in 2006 is within our control. We need to raise funds to hire programmers because this project is very technically intensive and we can't do it with part-time programmers. We need to alert the political candidates in 2006 not to concede an election without getting the data to request the recounts that we need. And we can do that too because we're their constituents. So we can send them the reports, we can request meetings with them, we can make sure that they know by 2006 that they're not to concede an election without checking with us first. And then it depends on the volunteer efforts. And we've been collecting groups of volunteers in every state so we can collect the data. We've got groups of volunteer lawyers that are going to be helping out, giving advice to the volunteer data gatherers. And we've got a group of volunteer programmers and a group of volunteer statisticians. And we may need to hire a full-time statistician or two by 2006. So the success of our project doesn't depend on convincing somebody else of something. It doesn't depend on even getting media access. It doesn't depend on passing legislation. It depends on things that we can do. So please come tomorrow at 11, and I'd be happy to fill you in on all the details of exactly what we need to do and what we need volunteers to do. And thank you very much.
I've got to make an announcement.